Welcome to the Group Home Riches Podcast. If you have the desire to be your own boss, create your own schedule, and become financially free while at the same time helping people in need, then you've come to the right place. At GroupHomeRiches.com, we teach people exactly like yourself how to get started in the group home business. And on this podcast, you're going to hear their stories firsthand.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Group Home Riches Podcast. Today's guest, I'm excited to speak with. She has been with us for a couple years, doing things a little bit differently than the typical business model. So I have a bunch of questions for her. I'm sure you guys are going to get a ton of value from this and maybe even learn a couple different things. And I think that I might even. So Kai, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thanks for reaching out. I know Kai, no coaching or anything like that. Seems like you just kind of got the gold course a couple years ago and just kind of got things rocking and rolling on your own. And you just reached out recently to let us know, hey, you want to come and tell your story. So thank you for that. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, like I said, I have quite a few questions for you just based on the little bit of info I got from you. Before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? Like, what were you doing before you even started to look this stuff up online? And then I always like to hear, you know, what motivated you to do that in the first place? Because this isn't your typical, like, just see us late night on TV. It's something you kind of have to seek out. So I'm always curious as to what made you want to do that. So let's start with just tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from. And then what were you doing before you kind of got into this industry?
Sure. So I'm from Coatesville, Pennsylvania, which is a small town near Philadelphia. From there, I went to college. I graduated from Georgetown University. And then I spent some time overseas playing basketball. After that, when I came home, I decided to get my master's in social work. So I've always been in like the social work / mental health field. But I was always seeing things from the other side. Never, like, I would advocate for individuals to find housing, affordable housing, but I would get a lot of no's, or most of the people that I work with were people that was getting assistance. And a lot of times landlords didn't want to go that route because they were in fear of their property getting damaged. So I heard a lot of no's from my clients, and I said to myself, I wanted to be able to provide that resource for them. So that's what kind of motivated me to get into that field, because I was looking at it from one side, and then I was actually looking for how to become that resource myself. And upon my research, that's when I came across you guys. So I was always in the field. I was just doing other things in the field.
Very cool. Very similar story. So a lot of our folks, if you listen to the podcast, a lot of people come from medical backgrounds, social work, nursing. So you probably always had that drive to help people. It's called the caretaker personality, which is always obvious by the career choice.
Yeah, because you're able, when you're in that field, you see all of the barriers. You see all of the struggles that, you know, the individuals that you work with are facing. So if you naturally have that caring and nurturing aspect about you, you're always going to want to help these individuals.
So when you were working with your clients, you had to go seek, you were calling up apartment complexes and landlords and places like that and just getting told no a lot, right?
Yeah. Well, through my experience as, like, I've been a caseworker, I've been supervising, I've been a supervisor for adults with intellectual disabilities while providing them with housing. So I've experienced a lot over the past few years. And sometimes I would get people that may not have the best background or not have the best credit, but I know they're working, and I know they're working towards just improving everything, whether it be their credit, the stability, all that. And I would call and I would advocate for my clients. And, you know, some people are very black and white that are not in the field. It's either you have this credit score or you don't, or you have this on your background or you don't. And they're very black and white. But for those that work in the field, no, it's not always like that. You have some people that just made poor choices 7-8 years ago. and it's still hindering them today. But you rarely come across those people that understand them as individuals and want to listen to their story, opposed to what's on paper can't always define a person.
Yeah, I always tell our members, our students, coaching clients, just assume that they're not going to be qualified. And then, mm-hmm. as you know, in the Gold Course, we have systems in place to, you know, kind of protect the landlord or the group home owners, operators, for, you know, worst case scenarios. So this is a really cool glimpse on the inside, like the other side, for our listeners, people, you know, interested in getting started, right?
Yeah.
It's usually the number one thing that hangs people up is actually reaching out to people like yourself who are working mm-hmm. with people that need this type of housing and just having a conversation with them. So I want you guys to kind of maybe rewind this back and listen to what Kai said about what she was doing. You know, she's actively seeking landlords that don't really know anything about this industry, right? All they mm-hmm. hear is, it's unfortunate, but from their side, all they hear is unqualified client or unqualified tenant. Yep. That's all they hear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what would your reaction be if you were to get a call from somebody actually seeking to work with you? What would your response be?
To work with me or to find housing?
Like, let's go back to when you were a caseworker, you know, looking to place mm-hmm. people into homes. What would have been your mm-hmm. reaction if you got a call from somebody that actually had a home and wanted to work with you and your clients?
I mean, I would be thrilled if I, you know, because it's the housing piece is so hard. And now rent is higher than it's been. So when you finally find a landlord or someone that's willing to work with, you know, individuals that's been like the population in the field that I've worked with, it's a blessing for us, for any case manager, for any supervisor, for anybody in the field, especially if they're willing to work with individuals that have things on their background or that may not have the best credit score.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, mm-hmm. you're not going to grill them hard. You're not going to, you know, ask them where they got your number from. It's probably going to make you them, right? Yeah. Yep. So this is why I want you guys to kind of internalize this. This is why we tell you to smile, dial, pick up the phone. The people on the other end, especially, you know, it might take some run around. You might need to like get through gatekeepers, but as soon as you reach people like Kai, you are literally going to mm-hmm. make their day and have a new best friend.
Yep. Yep.
And get placements, right?
And there's so many ways that you can, like, I work with, well, I provide the housing for so many people, with veterans. And that's one population that's promising, because once you establish relationships with like the VAs and other case managers and other programs, like it's like a revolving door. Whenever you have an opening, I don't have to post anything. A lot of my individuals come from word of mouth, and it's always like, hey, Kai, you got any rooms? And that's it.
Yeah. So you were on the inside. You're looking for this type of housing. You saw that there is mm-hmm. obviously huge demand, very little supply. Mm-hmm. So you saw opportunity to meet that demand, right?
Right.
Cool. So let's take it back to kind of the first couple steps then. And this was, it was about 2 years
2021,
ago.
2021. I went through this period. I was a supervisor and I worked with women who suffer from domestic violence. So a lot of my role was trying to find safe housing for these women. And it was very difficult for me to do that. And some people, well, most of them, you know, they couldn't afford a whole apartment, but a room for rent would be sufficient enough for them. So when I created like my whole plan and I did some research and I found you guys. And when I found you guys, I, you know, was reading through some things and I think I maybe had a couple exchanges via email with someone and I came across the gold package and I purchased it. And what sold me on the gold package was all of the models and the samples that you guys had. And the only thing, and I think you even had like the website set up mm-hmm. and so I purchased it and I just kind of, I used your model a little bit, but I just catered it towards everything that I wanted to do. I revamped like the whole website and everything, but it was good as far as getting started with the documents. And the biggest thing was that licensee agreement. That was huge.
That pays for itself. Like you save.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like want to, so that's a huge part of it, which is, we'll get into it a little bit. We'll explain what that is kind of briefly, but it's the tenant mm-hmm. agreement, which, you know, you're going to pay a lawyer hundreds of dollars to draft something like that up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, we kind of touched on this, like, hey, pick up the phone. You know, you want to find caseworkers, social workers to speak with. You probably already mm-hmm. knew them, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you were in the field. So you knew exactly what we're talking about.
Well, not really, because I live in Maryland and mm-hmm. all my business is in Pennsylvania. So I know a lot of people in my town where I am. So it was, once I got like the first house filled, I just made like one connection here or there, and then it just kind of took over.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah, I would definitely say making those connections are great. And I was very strategic with how I went about it, because I knew I didn't know what the financial responsibility would be outside of paying the necessary monthly bills. So I knew that when I tapped into different populations, like I wanted to house veterans, but I knew I couldn't have a house full of veterans because of the mental health aspect of it, because I would have to then staff it and then pay the staff to be there 24 hours. So I don't have any house managers. I don't have any of that. All of my individuals, they can live alone, self-sufficient, and most of them are working. The veterans that I do have, I make sure I keep in contact with their caseworkers so that I can make sure they're compliant with therapy if they're in it, or they may have had something in the past where they may be in NA or AA or something like that. So I stay on it through like the caseworkers, because for me, I also own a mental health agency. So I do not have time to be at these houses every day. So all of the guys are self-sufficient.
Beautiful. And yeah, for folks, you know, listening out there, just getting started, if you kind of want to hear examples of these types of conversations, you can go listen to live marketing calls, where you hear us, you know, have these combos with social workers and getting information about the programs and stuff like that. So you probably were good at, like, you're from kind of that field, so you're probably really good mm-hmm. at speaking with them and figuring out who you needed to speak with. So why don't you tell us, when you first started out, like, did you have like a rental property? So mm-hmm. You live in Maryland?
Yes.
And the business is in Pennsylvania. So what was that like? Was that a rental property, or did you have the house before you started? What was that like?
So here's the thing. Mm-hmm. with going through the information from the Gold course, there were a lot of ways that I'm not going to give all the information out because people need to get the Gold course, but there were different options. So a lot of people think that you have to buy all these properties in order to make this thing work. So I have three homes and I haven't purchased any of them. What happened was I was calling around looking for landlords that were willing to work with me. This is like in the very, very beginning. And a lot of landlords don't, as soon as they hear you say, hey, are you open to subleasing? It's like, no, bye. And it's like a lot of those calls are just as quick as that. Like, no, bye. Mm-hmm. Why are you calling me? Like, I've heard a lot of rude, talked to a lot of rude people, but I heard a lot of no's. And then I got this one call I made, and the guy was like, well, I never did it, but like, what were you thinking? And I told him what I was looking to do. And he was like, wow, that's amazing. And he was like, then the place that I called for, it was like a 3-bedroom place. And so he reached back out to me and he was like, after hearing what you want to do, I just purchased this one property, but it needs a lot of work. like he had to redo everything. But he was like, you can help me create the floor plan and we could do it together. He said it won't be ready for about 6 or 7 months, but it's 7 bedrooms, 3 levels. So he has been, I don't even know what to call him now, a silent partner, an investor. I don't know what to call him, but he's been like a god. And he, like, if I reach out and, I mean, he has a lot of properties. So a lot of times he'll ask me what I'm looking for, because with me, he can guarantee that he's getting his money every month. When you make these calls, you got to figure, before you make these calls, you have to figure out how it can be appealing to the landlord as well. Bingo. Because you can't present it as if you're just trying to rent one of their places. Because out of myself, my guy gets a property manager because he doesn't have to deal with any of the tenants, because I do it. I do my own screenings with the background and credit checks and all that. Only thing he gets from me is a monthly payment, and that's it. And I never need him to do anything. And I have rules, and the house is set up a certain way, so it's always clean. It's always presentable. And we take care of the property. So for him, it's a win-win. But you have to be able to make it sound appealing for the landlord, because otherwise it's just going to be like, you're the middleman and that's that. But this particular gentleman, we did the one house, and then I'm like, hey, like, what else you got? And then he set me up with another one. And then I have the third one running. The third one I opened in like April. And now I'm working on a licensed facility. That process is completely different, but that's what I'm working on now.
Love it. A lot to unpack there. So
yeah.
To first, just, I like to focus on just like actionable steps for folks. So you said you got a lot of no's. Approximately how many calls do you think you made, like, to landlords before you found the partner?
Probably about 10 to 12.
See, that's why.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to zero in on that, okay? Because you said that it was a lot, right? And I can tell you've probably never had a like an inside sales job before.
Never.
Okay. So, like, telecommunicating or inside sales, just in the office, smiling and dialing all day long. Do you know how much a typical salesperson, like, how many phone calls they're required to make?
No, I just know I could never do that. I know it's a lot.
It's good character development, I'll tell you that. But a typical quota is 80 to 100 phone calls per day.
Oh, wow.
So you say you had a lot of no's, right? But you did about an hour's worth of inside sales work. It's just to put things in perspective for the folks out there. So you actually, that's a really good percentage, especially if you were doing like what's called cold calling. So you were probably, was it like Craigslist?
I was just searching. I was just like, I may have been on Zillow or something, and I was just looking for properties in the town that I wanted, like county that I wanted to be in. And I was just calling random landlords. Some I would get through to, others you can't, because, you know, there's the automated system stuff. But I had created, like, some I was just looking up and just calling. But I would write down who I would call. And then the other list I had was like the VA, caseworkers in the VA, or like residential supervisors in certain programs, some shelters, you know, because they help people transition out of there and find them housing. So it kind of, I had a couple different lists, but when speaking to them, it wasn't the no's. It was just kind of navigating through that process.
Yeah, you got to make a lot of calls on that end sometimes just to get to talk to the right person. But you don't really hear a lot of no's on that side of things.
Right.
But I like to get specifics about that, because that's another thing that hangs people up. Like, they might talk to like 5 landlords, and not even landlords. They talk to like property management companies, most likely. Mm-hmm. They hear no, and then they, oh, no landlord wants to work with me. I'll be like, well, how many calls did you make? Oh,
right.
You did about a half hour's worth of a full day's work, and you're ready to quit. So, So that's one thing for folks to remember out there. Also, were you screening the ads for to like zero in on actual owners, or were you just...
No, I was just looking at, I know I wanted at least 3 bedrooms.
Okay.
So because at first I wasn't sure if I wanted to have like 1 person in each room too. So I wanted to just do at least 3 rooms because I had to make it make sense for me too with looking at the rent, you know, and all that and what I would charge, because this first place that I had, I was literally just like kind of jumping out there. I didn't know what to expect, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing.
Yeah. Well, you picked up the phone and you got lucky. It's funny how that works out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then another thing to keep in mind, guys, is that Kai was probably speaking with like real estate agents and property managers mm-hmm. that are hired by the owner to find a qualified tenant. Yeah. So of course they're not going to hear you out. if they mm-hmm. hear anything besides, you know, 3 times the rent income, single adult, uh-huh. great credit, they're going to hang up on you.
Yep.
Also, you bring up an awesome point. This is a really good kind of frame of mind to be in for just like even personal relationships, sales, marketing. You need to not think of like what you want. So you don't open the conversation, for example, you don't open a conversation with a landlord. Hey, do you allow subletting? Right. Mm-hmm. It's
mm-hmm. right. This will be like, not what?
Yeah, no. Exactly. You have to put yourself in the other person's, you know, feet, mm-hmm. be empathetic of their situation. Their situation, it's very simple. They have a vacant mm-hmm. property that they're losing money on, and they want to fill that up as quick as possible with someone that's going to pay them on time and not call them. So,
you know what someone told me to do? What? Actually, to kind of just get a feel for the landlord, like reach out to them and act as if you want the place and meet them in person. And as you're walking through, you know, generate different, just casual conversation, and then bring up the idea. Like, did you ever think about subleasing? Or I never went that route because that's a lot of time, mm-hmm. but I can see how it could work.
It could work. We had a gentleman in our private group like a week or two ago. He did 3 appointments like that.
Uh-huh.
On the third one, he got a contract.
Wow.
But it really would, no matter what route you go, I recommend uh-huh. people go to real estate meetup groups where it's just a room mm-hmm. filled with landlords and real estate investors.
Yeah.
Looking to meet people, looking to find new opportunities. That's what that's how I always get mm-hmm. relationships in the real estate business, but it's to each their own. But you hit the nail on the head with making it appealing for the other person you're speaking with. So we have like a little elevator pitch that's in the gold course, but it's essentially, my name's Kai. I'm looking to start, you know, a new business in affordable housing. It's a way to 10x the cash flow of a typical rental property, get a guaranteed check from the government, and you know, you have way more control over the property. I already got my waiting list, got a ton of people mm-hmm. wanting to move in. I'm just looking for a property that I can operate out of. Tell me a little mm-hmm. bit about yourself. Tell me a little about the property, blah, blah, blah. But that first sentence is what's going to pique any landlord's interest. They're going to hear, wait, what? More money, more control, uh-huh. right? Guaranteed checks, like that's at least going to get them to like start asking questions. So what was it about your I just call him business partner, so what was mm-hmm. it about the your business partner on that conversation? What do you think piqued his interest and got him to like start listening to you?
I think that he's just a great person mm-hmm. and I think when you listen, because I can tell you, like, hey, I work in a social work field, mental health field. I work with a lot of individuals trying to help them, you know, overcome barriers, this and that. Like, some people that'll go in one ear and out the other, but it has to be a certain kind of individual that it will touch and really acknowledge what you're doing. Like, oh, this is dope. Like, this is good. We need this. And I think that's what it was, because I didn't do anything different. I just told him, once he said, Oh, I never thought about that. Tell me a little bit about what you're thinking. I already knew I had it.
Yep.
It was like, you know, because the other one didn't say anything remotely close to that, but he wanted to hear it. And then he was engaged in the conversation and just wanted to know more. Now, he never asked me about anything financially, as far as what I charge people or anything like that. We just discussed the property and he just discussed what he needs in rent. And that was it. And when I went over the numbers, it's crazy. My first home is, well, I don't know if we want to get into numbers or.
It's completely up to you. The more info you want to reveal, the more they're going to get out of it. So you can estimate, you can be vague, or you can be specific, whatever you'd like.
So I'll just throw some of these numbers out. So, like I said, the first home we created, there was 7 rooms. So he wanted 1700 for rent.
Let me pause
I've
that.
offered
It's four. $1,700 for a 7-bedroom.
7 rooms. So we
Wow.
created it. I think initially it may have been 3, but the home is huge. So when we did the floor plan, it ended up being 7 rooms. It's 3 levels.
Got you.
When I told him what I wanted to do, he even created like another kitchen on the second floor.
Beautiful.
So it's not like crazy. It's not chaotic with the bathrooms. It's 3 bathrooms, one on each floor. It's 2 kitchens. And when I did the numbers, I offer fully furnished TVs, beds, dressers, linens, everything. You can literally move in with just your clothes and you'll be okay. And all utilities are included. And I charge 800 a room. So if you do that math, 800 times 7 and you minus his 17, and I pay the utilities, that's what it is for just that one. And that was the first one that I kind of jumped out there with.
We're gonna
You want a
slow.
calculator?
We're gonna sl we're gonna slow the podcast down for my awful math skills. But you can just tell, yeah, based off of the, yeah, so that's a monster deal. And that's pretty for a private bedroom. Is that kind of on the low end for your area?
I mean, I guess it's normal. I
Okay.
actually, when I started off 750, and then January 1st, 2023, I took it up to 800 because I was just looking at the utilities like a little higher, and for what they were getting, like, you know, you just a one bedroom right now is like 1100, 12, and that doesn't even include your water, electric, cable, all that. So you probably be paying, end up paying like 14, almost 15 a month for a one bedroom compared to, you know, when you're renting a room, everything is taken care of.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the business model in a nutshell, guys. So it's affordable for the tenants, and then you can do the math, and it's a cash cow. Have you ever looked into like real estate investing or being a landlord or anything like that?
I have, but I just have so much going on.
Well,
What with working with
I don't
with my partner.
recommend it. So
You don't recommend it?
I don't recommend it for most people because you do the math. What do you think you would cash flow in that area if you needed to put, 20% down, then you're paying the mortgage and then you're getting market rent. How much money do you think you would get per month?
Yeah, not as much.
Most landlords consider a good deal 200 or 300 bucks per month. You're over 10xing the cash flow on a property that you don't even own, right? So that's the business model in a nutshell, guys. So
And it's so easy because when things, like if anything happens, it's like I think one time the refrigerator went out and I just called him and like, hey, the refrigerator went out over here and it was repaired and in no time. I think that's the part that's great too. Like I don't have to worry about fixing anything or any of those things. It's kind of like I guess leveraging someone else's money, so to
yeah,
say. I don't
that's
know.
awesome. Yeah, a lot of times, and it all comes down to negotiation, but a lot of times you could be asking for a property. Some of our people like partner with somebody like that, no money down. So sometimes they need to pay a little bit above market rent. they offered to do maintenance, but I mean, you hit a home run with that one. So good job.
A home. Listen, the yeah. first time. And then when you speak about like the maintenance of things, my dad cuts the grass at all the properties and he doesn't charge me. Of course, I pay him, but he doesn't charge me. But he's newly retired, so he like loves doing it. so definitely, if you find the right person, it'll work out.
Yeah. And great closing rate. So you made 12 phone calls. I would say, mm-hmm. I bet you about half of those were like property management companies that,
yeah.
if I saw that ad, I would have told you, hey, don't even call them.
uh-huh. And my guy happened to be the owner, which is, yeah, it's rare. That's what you want.
Yeah.
It's
like,
right.
Did you find him on, was it Craigslist?
No, probably wasn't, because I don't really trust Craigslist too much. But was it Zillow? It probably, Zillow, I don't know. I haven't done it in so, I mean, yeah, it probably was Zillow.
Okay. Yeah, for folks listening out there, we have a email me and all. Honestly, we need to upload it to the Gold Course. But I did a webinar where I show you guys how to pinpoint like actual owners. There's usually telltale signs in the ads, so I can pick them out like that. But anyways, awesome. So these are above average results, guys. So Kai hit a home run with this. So, you know, cash flow wise, it seemed like she got a great
deal. The other ones are regular.
Yeah. So we kind of like to keep things conservative when we talk about like uh-huh. the typical deals and how to find people. But uh-huh. You see, this is an example of a home run. And you mentioned you do things a little bit different. So why don't you tell us about like, where did you find the tenants and what type of management systems do you have in place? I'm specifically mm-hmm. curious about that because you're doing this uh-huh. remotely, basically. So why don't you break that down a little bit?
Kind of. So it's not really. So some things are remote. Like, let's see. I do everything myself. I don't have a property manager. So when people reach out, I'll run their credit and background check. And I only do it on TurboTenant. So they pay an application fee and they pay the money. I submit their stuff. I look at their background, whatever's on it. It's a phone call. We discuss. One thing, the luxury that I do have is, like I said, I'm in Maryland. I'm like an hour and 15 minutes from the properties.
Oh, that's not that bad.
So, yeah. So my dad is 5 minutes from all the properties. So I have my mental health agency is based out of that area as well. So I go up there a couple times a week to work. I try to schedule things on the days that I'm up there. But I have two rooms available right now and someone wants to see it on Monday. I don't plan to go up and work on Monday. So my dad will just show the room for me. Nice. And when a person moves out, he cleans the rooms for me as well. So he's a big plus in this whole equation. But yeah, like I said, he cuts the grass. He does that. Other than that, it kind of runs itself. Like everyone knows there's rules that I'm very stern with as far as like there's no overnight guests. So that doesn't create something. And then the cleanliness is major for me. Because at any point, if I have a caseworker or somebody from the VA or whoever needs to come in there, it needs to look presentable because I want them to continue calling me. So all the people that are in there, they understand what's expected of them and they need a place to live. So if they want to have a place to live, that's nice because do remember this particular property, it was completely gutted and everything is new. So they love the place and I have cameras that are in the common areas in the front and back door if I ever need to go back to them. And that's it.
Now, I know the answer to this, but let's say you do have someone and like they're just refusing to clean up after themselves. They don't want to listen to you. They don't want to follow the rules. Mm-hmm. What's the eviction process like in that area? Is it 6 to 12 months?
It's a conversation first, but so I've been, let me see, because some things have happened.
How do you even employ rules like that? Because of your typical, renter, like you've done a lease before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like imagine you never had a landlord like require you to clean the dishes or put cameras in the home right. or anything like that. So how, right. why can you do that in the first place?
Well, first, I'm very straightforward with this is a licensee agreement and not a lease.
There we go.
And I'm very clear on that. So the same way, this is not a situation where we're going to go through the eviction process and be going to court for 3-4 months. This agreement is, you know, it's operable like an Airbnb, hotel, whatever. If you don't follow these rules, you can be asked to leave. It's as simple as that. But I would do 3-month agreements at one time. And then I kind of got out of the 3 months and now I do a year. But a lot of my people have been there since I first started.
Nice.
So it doesn't look like they're really going anywhere, but it's definitely a conversation. And I haven't had to deal with anyone that's just completely just non-compliant.
Yeah, there's nuance to this stuff, right? So you do need to have some people skills, get a good read on people.
Yeah.
The kind of questions like when you're going over that. So guys, if you're not a Gold Course member, let me rewind it. So we're talking about the tenant agreement. It's basically the house rules in legalese. So Kai's using the technical term for it, which is the licensee agreement, which basically means, so again, it's legal terms, but we're not leasing a property to people. So Kai's got seven people and one property. Most likely they don't qualify for a lease. So you're not going to give seven people legal leasing rights to one property. All we're doing is licensing space to our guests or tenants or whatever, you know, whatever legal term you want to call them in your area. And she, you know, hit the nail on the head again, similar to like a hotel or an Airbnb. And that's included in the Gold Course, a bunch of legal mumbo jumbo in there, but it's basically the house rules written in legalese for you guys. Yeah. So you're going over that when, you know, you get a call, you get a referral. Is it veterans that you're dealing with? Is it mixed?
So the veterans right now, I have, I think, two veterans in the home. In this one particular home, I've been kind of referring to the one with the seven rooms the whole time, because when I first started, I also only had males because I was trying to figure out population that would be less messy. And I figured females may need a little more attention and it may be a little more catty. So men typically don't really care that much.
I didn't say that. Yeah. That was Kai. Don't cancel me.
But males tend to just, you know, kind of go with the flow and just be, it's just easier. So I forget, I just lost my train of.
We were just talking about the demographics. The all males, which...
Oh, yeah, yeah. All males. I have a couple veterans. No veterans. Well, I haven't really had too many call themselves because they're typically older and I don't know, they just may not have access to certain things or they may not be out as much, but their caseworkers and residential people usually call out to me and ask me if I have anything available. I've also housed individuals who were recently... released from prison, which is another good connection because now I have relationships with all the parole officers and they come to the houses or they're at the point where if someone's coming home and if they've been in contact with me, like they don't even need to look at the home because they know it's one of my places. So they've been to all of them already. So it's a mix. It's a variety in there now. Some people that, you know, with certain things on their background that I haven't worked with, but I do house a lot of veterans come through and they're typically older and just looking for something more stable and just they're looking to stay for a while.
And are the organizations that you're kind of networking with, are they offering assistance? Are they paying for their clients?
Some are. It depends. Some veterans are 80%, 100%. My most recent one gets like $4,000 a month. So, I mean, he's just paying $800. So he doesn't need assistance. But I've had people in the past where they'll pay like half of their rent and they'll send a check directly to me. And then the individuals will pay me the other portion. Yeah. So there hasn't been a problem with the payments with working with the organizations.
All right. Very cool. So that's a kind of a breakdown of the overall kind of the basics for you guys. So first step, I always recommend, like, did you do like the networking before you reached out to the landlords, or did you get the property first, then start reaching out? What was that like?
Well, I didn't get any of the properties until I got that one landlord.
That's right. So you got the relationship with the landlord, and then you had time to kind of look for referrals because he needed to do rehab.
Yep. So then from there, from the time where he was finishing his stuff, there was like maybe a week. I furnished the whole place, which was a lot, but I furnished the whole place. And then I had people, like I already had the rental applications created and everything. So I kind of had a list at that point. And then it filled up very, very quickly.
There we go. So that's what we recommend for most people to do. So if you're just starting out, hey, how do I get started? We recommend kind of doing the networking ahead of time. You know, lining up referral sources, establishing those relationships. And you just let the social workers know or your contacts know, hey, I'm just getting started out. I'm looking for my first property right now. I plan on being open in the next 30, 60 days while you're doing that. And that helps to establish credibility when you start to speak with these landlords, right? Most of the people, most of the landlords are not going to be like Kai's guy. They're going to ask you questions. So, you know, be ready for that. We don't want to say that it's easy, but there's kind of simple systems that you can put in place. So to kind of help Kai manage things, since she is, it's about an hour and a half away. So it's not like you could go check it every single day or anything like that.
Right, right.
You've got cameras.
And that's the luxury of the cameras. Because if something, you know, I haven't had any, but I will say one of the biggest challenges, and a lot of people reach out and want to know, so how'd you get started? What you do? And it's, to be honest, it's exhausting. And I used to always have the conversations, but then I learned that people just want you to just tell them every single thing. And it's like, I need you to try to do some stuff yourself first. But the other part that people need to look into is the zoning in whatever city or county you want to do things. And because the legal part of it, you can't just find a house and then just turn it into just rooms for rent, because depending on where it is, the city does not, they don't allow it. So, and then a lot of places is technically a rooming house, or they may consider it anything else, and it could be a problem.
Yeah, there's a gray area there. And I always just tell people, hey, pick your battles. So, you guys can do this on your own. So there's an issue going on in Dallas right now, and kind of a more upscale neighborhood, where they just want to ban Airbnbs. So the local board or code or whatever, they're banning Airbnbs. That's illegal technically. So the Airbnb operators are fighting. So do some research in your local area to see if there is going to be a battle. The federal laws are on your side, but choose your battles wisely.
Right.
That's a great point. A lot of nuance to that, a lot of gray area. It's all broken down in our legal section. If you really did want to like fight that, like if you were in an area where they said, hey, you can't do that. If you want to house these people, you need to do this, this, and this. You could hire a lawyer and get a bunch of money, but it's going to take a long time. Yeah, we don't recommend it. We recommend do your due diligence, look to see like if there is an issue. So we, you know, Andy, he's dealt with this before. He operates in areas where in theory he's violating the local code, but then when he presents to them the federal code, they've always just backed off because they know they can get in trouble. But it's like, choose like your housing, you know, you're taking like, what's it called? Transitioning like out of prison. So
yeah,
I'm not sure of their background, but to give an extreme example, like imagine you went into a really like A-class neighborhood, gated community. Mm-hmm. There's a HOA, there's a neighborhood watch. Every one of your neighbors has like four kids and they're all playing outside. Mm-hmm. And you want to start a transitioning home for ex-violent felons. Now, in theory, yes, the federal laws are on your side, but would you want to get into a long legal battle with all of your neighbors to do that?
Yeah.
I don't think so. So that's a great point. But yeah, do your due diligence, understand the laws. The legal section breaks all this stuff down, but just look what's going on in practice. If you are in an area where they're like trying to shut places like this down, you know, maybe operate in a different part of town.
Yeah, because sometimes they're looking for, I know for where I'm from, it's a lot of gentrification happening and they want people to purchase in the area opposed to creating rooming houses and everything else. But I also learned that I had to be technical or with the terms, because when I first started, I kept throwing out transitional housing, like I'm done transitional housing, and that was like a red flag.
Yeah,
apparently. So yeah, it's like you got to be careful.
You want to keep it vague. So
yeah, right,
we use the term group home riches just because that's what everybody thinks of these as, right? But when you guys are like marketing, or, you know, when you're thinking of like your company names, or when you're, you know, speaking with people, to say things like affordable housing. Cooperative living. Like you want to kind of keep it vague, because there's so many different jurisdictions where you, again, hit the nail on the head. Like if you say transitioning housing, then they're going to be, okay, well, that's what this means in this area, and you need to do this, 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 and this.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. I have learned.
Yeah. So. And we always recommend, hey, do your due diligence, do it on your own. Just try not to get the city involved, because 99.99% of the time, if you speak with someone in the city, they don't know about this business model. They don't know the federal laws. They don't know the fair housing stuff. Go look up like, oh, this sounds like a boarding home or a group home. Read what their local code says. But
yeah.
So I wanted to kind of touch on, so briefly, just to kind of recap. So we really zeroed in on the beginning stuff, which is great, because that's what most of the people listening, like they're looking to get this journey started. So you have the 7-bedroom cash cow. You got two other properties, right?
Yes. The two other ones are 3 bedrooms.
So not as profitable as the first big one, but those are doing decent as well?
Right. Yeah. They're doing good in it. You know, for those kind of homes, since it wasn't a situation where it was like, let's create the floor model, because they weren't done. He didn't have to redo anything. Typically in a 3-bedroom, one room is smaller than a medium size and a bigger one. So I do those 750, 850.
Okay. And those are with the same business partner?
Same guy, and he wants 1350. So however that math ends up, it's still probably more than what someone would get. Just a landlord renting to a family.
It seems like things are stabilized for the most part. So like, of course, you know, there might be issues you have to deal with, but on average, how much time do you think you spend per week on running that side of the business?
None. I don't. Once people are in there, that's it. People just reach out and let me know. Like, somebody paid their rent today. Today's what, the 16th, 17th?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody paid their rent today for September. Like, they reach out to me and, hey, are you going to be in town this week? I have the rent if you want to stop by. Or, you know, they pay me electronically. So I don't have to spend much time, unless maybe something happens, which is, I can't even think of the last time something has happened. So
it's a numbers game as you scale. That is just property management in general. So I'm not trying to scare you guys, but Kai is killing it and she's like best case scenario. So
yeah,
just, you know, dealing with people, you know, in, I used to do property management many years ago before I started working with Andy and doing real estate investing and stuff. But mm-hmm. you know, you had like the one property I managed, well, worked in management with, it was like 400 units. They're all qualified, mm-hmm. you know, good credit, good income, but it's just so many people, it's bound, you're going to have issues. So as you scale, it's just, you're dealing with humans. Humans are not perfect. So
yeah.
There's the typical, you know, you might have people that don't pay. There might be skirmishes, issues at the property, but it seems like the, you know, your business partner handles the major issues, which that's awesome. But
yeah,
I could tell you guys nightmare stories for days in property management. So, but all in all, so 2 years, you're, it's kudos to you. I would guess that through years working with people and social work, you probably got a really good skill of like reading people. So probably are able to figure out like, all right, who's going to fit with who. You could probably screen people like, all right, this person's not going to follow the rules, so I'm not going to call.
But you know, people present well. I've been burnt a couple times. Whereas, you know, when people need a place to live, they present one way. And then when things happen, I'm like, wait, who is this person? So I'm really working on this part. This is the part that I need to work on.
Well,
taking
that's
my feelings out of it. Because I get so upset. Like, I can't believe. And, you know, being in the show, you go above and beyond. You do like, I get the place power wash. Like, it's certain things that I do that I don't have to do. But I want it to look a certain way. And then when people do things, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe. I cannot believe you did this, but everybody keeps telling me you gotta separate them. Like,
yeah, I'll give you, I learned this just through seeing other people's errors, right? So I would, anytime I see someone in property management, if they bend the rules for somebody, it usually does not work out in the landlord or property manager's favor. So separate business and charity.
That's what I would say. Exactly.
So rocking and rolling, she says she spends zero time, and you guys can do the math. Okay. So she makes infinite amount of money per hour. I would bet like it's probably a couple hours per month. If you really calculate like the calls and following up on stuff, if there's vacancies, but all in all, if you guys go back, you break out the calculator, you kind of hear what Kai said, you'll understand that a lot of the stuff we say in our YouTube videos and emails and stuff like that, we really do try to keep things conservative for just home runs and best case scenarios. Kai is a great example of that. So things are rocking and rolling, running smooth with kind of the basic GHR model for the most part. I would say the biggest difference is just that you're not doing like the roommate situation, but other than that,
it's pretty
standard.
Right.
Which
now with the licensing one, I will do roommates, but this one, I was going back and forth in the beginning. I didn't really know what to do.
You know, I will tell you one thing that is not in the gold course is how to start a licensed facility. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that journey that you're about to embark on?
Oh man, it's a lot. Kind of flat out. It's no way else. There's no way to put it. It's a completely different ball game. I've just spent the last month writing policies. It's like you get licensed. I'm going through my ODP because I'm housing individuals with intellectual disabilities. So I have to go through that, submit a bunch of policies, and then I have to also get approved by the state. They'll come out to the home and they'll do physical walkthrough of the place to make sure that it's in compliance. But it's 1,000 things to do before you even get to that step. So it's been, that's like a whole nother podcast day.
Do you see
it's why? It's a lot. It's worth it, but it's a lot.
Do you see why we recommend if you're just getting started out to not go down that path?
You should not.
But there's advantages to it. So, are you Do you have the property already?
Yeah. So same guy that I'm working with.
Very cool.
And it's in Lebanon County, which is like Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And it's a duplex, but they're side by side. So it's three rooms in each home. It's six altogether. So I'm going to do two people in each room.
Now, the big difference for this, guys, is that the previous properties that we've been speaking about and kind of the most of the content with Group Home Riches, on paper, you're simply a landlord. You're offering housing. And then if your tenants or guests, if they do require any type of licensed service or anything that has a certificate, it's just going to be outsourced. And the majority of the time, this stuff's taken care of already. Like, you're working with caseworkers a lot of times. So that's an example of outsourcing, right? So your tenant may have a caseworker. You know, it's not like just because you're providing housing for people and they need a caseworker, you don't have to go through the process and become a caseworker.
Right.
So you can apply that concept to any type of licensed service. Okay. On with the licensed route, totally different. So Kai's getting set up to not only just provide the housing, but you're going to be providing like a medical service,
all the services, behavioral support for people that have behavioral issues. I'm also a licensed behavior specialist. I'll provide that. The one thing that I'll outsource is a nurse, and they don't have to be there 24/7, but they need, if something happens, they need to be able to get to the home. So I'm going to have to contract that, but I need to hire staff because a staff has to be there every day, all day, because these individuals will live there. So it's a whole different responsibility.
Totally. It's like night and day. So people are just starting out. Yeah. This is your first.
Yeah, don't go that route. unless you are in the field and it's a lot. It's a lot. And I'll say, with doing all these policies and doing everything, I can't see how the average person with a 9-to-5 could do it. Because once you go through like an orientation with the state, you only get 60 days to create and submit all of these policies. And if you don't hand them in, then you have to wait another year, and there's a waiting list to even be a provider. So you have to be able to lock in. And fortunately, because I own a mental health agency, I'm in control of my hours. So over the past month and a half, I've been home just working on this stuff. So if I had a 9-to-5, then it would be a disaster.
So you have to come up with the policy and procedures, and they give you the guidelines to come up with those policies and procedures, right?
They'll give you the regulation. Like, it'll say, how does your agency plan to assure the staff complete all of the required trainings annually? And you have to write whatever it is, list the trainings that they're going to take during orientation to make sure that you're in compliance with regulations. You have to create it all. The only thing they're going to give you is the regulation. They'll give you the regulation number, which is 6,400 regs, and they'll refer to it like 6,400-23. It may say something about training. And then you have to create it, and then once it goes to them, they'll check off if provider is ready or provider is not ready. And then you have a certain amount of days to get them the corrections. And if you don't have it within those days, you have to start over. I was on a waiting list since 2021.
Okay. Wow.
Yep.
So it's like, it's about probably 6 to 12 months. And that's if you kind of have someone that knows like the ins and outs, I would say, that can kind of guide you along. And even then, you still need to, you need to be able to find the property. You need to have the skills to kind of do the rehab. And it's not like you can't just do like a typical like rent ready rehab, slap some paint on there. They're going to have like everything down to like the types of locks
hallways
on the windows,
have to be
I bet
lit.
You.
The room has to be at least 50 square feet if you're sharing it, like 100 and something square feet. it's yeah. so much down to the type of door that you have.
Exactly. Yep. They yeah. might come in yep. and be like, hey, you know, this door frame is like an inch off. So just
yeah. that
real quick and we'll be or back. That, you know,
certain
that,
things, fire resistant, like
it's project.
yeah. So this is definitely the route to get your feet wet and to just, you know, everybody's depending on who you place in the homes. It could require you to be around a little more, or especially if it's something that you're doing and you haven't been in the field, it's going to be, you're going to have to learn a lot, even, you know, with how to talk to people and just dealing with different caseworkers and social workers and
yeah.
parole officers and all these things, whoever you plan to bring in the home.
Exactly.
But once you build the relationships, you're good.
Yeah. So definitely, we always recommend, hey, you know, learn to walk before you learn how to run.
Yeah, for sure.
Kai had a kind of a head start because she was in the industry kind of already. But a lot of you guys listening, you probably kind of similar background. But after all, we want to give it to you guys real and kind of lay out the facts, like the advantages, the disadvantages. There's a big advantage to the licensed facility, which is, you know, why would you go through all that paperwork, Kai?
Well, the waiver pays for everything. And I'm going to just throw a couple numbers out there for that. Depending on the level of the individual's needs, the state will pay up to like $500-$600 a day for these individuals.
Yeah.
So it just kind of depends.
You guys could do the math on that. So,
you sure can.
Yes. And that's like a shared, like roommate
and
situation?
That's shared. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's shared.
So you have your overhead, right? But yeah.
And you provide all the meals and, you know, you have way more responsibilities. Like you have the staff. And if all of your staff happen to be sick one day, guess who has to cover? You're going to have to cover.
Yep.
So, you know, that kind of stuff, making sure meals, there's different obligations, like meals have to be posted a month in advance so that they know what they're going to have for dinner. And the biggest thing with the state is these individuals have a say in their care. You're not just, all right, well, I'm going to feed them spaghetti this day and this day and do, no, it's all about the clients.
Like everything.
So down. It's a whole different approach. Yeah.
It's all like documented and kind of regimented. But yeah.
Yeah. You got to write notes. You got to daily note for these individuals, participate in individual support plans with the family. And because these individuals have like caseworkers and everything. So you have to be in communication with them as well.
Yeah. But if you could get through it, if you can manage it.
Yeah.
The ROI just insane, like off the charts.
Right. So, yeah.
But that's the type of business where you just grind it out for a couple of years and then you retire. So
yeah. Yep.
If you guys are listening, and Kai, maybe you check out the interview we did. It was a while ago. A gentleman named Yaz.
He
did this. He just went hard for like a decade and retired. Living life, retired early. Got a couple got a couple gray hairs though, but
yeah.
Well, very cool. We'll have to do a part two to kind of hear how that goes. But man, you dropped a ton of value, kept you a little longer than typical, but you brought up a couple awesome points and really cool story. Mm-hmm. So before we wrap it up, do you have any like parting words for the folks out there?
The only thing I'll say is definitely invest in the gold membership or the gold. I don't even know what it's technically called anymore, but the gold package. Yeah. Yes, that's definitely worth having. And like I said, you get so many documents, you can adjust things and do things. You don't have to keep it the same. You can adjust it to what you're trying to do. And then just do your own research as well. I think you have to have a certain mentality. I think if you sit back and you just wait for everybody to give you the answers, it's not going to work. So you have to put the work in as well and be proactive, make phone calls, make connections. You have to want to do those things. And then, you know, it could be a great thing because it's definitely been life changing for me. And this is, I mean, the houses are just extra. That's not my job. So it's benefit for sure.
What's the future look like for you? Do you plan on just kind of keeping this as a part-time gig, or?
I plan on doing, I'm going to see how this license facility is. And then I don't think I'm doing any more regular like rooms for rent, like how I did. I want to see how the licensing thing goes and then hopefully open more like that, because right now it's tough because I'm just now creating all these policies and doing all this stuff. But once I'm approved, I can open up as many and continue to do that. So I'm looking for just opening up in different counties.
Beautiful. As Yaz told me, like the key to the success and on that route, obviously like management is huge, but just learning the art of like getting through the bureaucracy, it's like a different language. Once you become fluent in that, then it's off to the races. So, we'll see. I bet you after that's like stabilized, you probably like start to think about, you know, maybe an early retirement. We'll see.
Yeah. We shall see. Awesome. Definitely not working more in the next couple of years. I could pay that.
Yeah. Well, where can people find you out there, Kai?
Yes, you can check out the website. It's www.steps2success. So the name of my business is Steps to Success, and it's the number 2. So it's STEPS, the number 2, SUCCESSPA.com. And cool. Yeah, we'll put Instagram that in the
description for you.
Okay. Instagram, you could check out some of the rooms and the houses. It's _ Steps to Success. Same thing with the number 2. And Facebook is just Steps to Success.
Awesome. And folks listening out there, you kind of heard just about two years in?
Yeah, 2 years.
Running smooth. I would say a little smoother than normal. So she's killing it, guys. Awesome story. Thank you so much for coming on, Kai.
Thank you guys for having me.
If you're just curious about it, you know, maybe you found us on YouTube or a podcast, not interacting with us at all, head on over to grouphomeriches.com, sign up for your free 5-part course, and that'll just be emailed over to you over a couple of days. We're just kind of breaking down the basics of the business. If it does sound like something that's, you know, perfect for you guys, you want to get going, you want to be gung-ho, bare minimum, check out the gold course, as Kai mentioned. We really try to put as much information in there as possible, pretty much everything that you need, that you can need. You work on your own time. Yeah, we really do. The one critique, it's kind of like information overload, I think. So,
I mean, it's down to the email that you can send to people. It's a lot.
And Kai brings up a great point. I like to tell people, hey, the gold course isn't a book. Don't just sit there and read it. Go like step by step. Think of it like, you know, choose your own adventure. You want to, you know, maybe read one section, you know, how to build your mailing list, for example, or your contact list. And then you could spend like a week on that, you know, working on that. So the people that get the most out of it are people like Kai that are proactive. You take action as you go along and you kind of learn along the way. And if you guys kind of think about it, like everything you've ever done, that's how you've learned it. You know, Kai, I played basketball. She didn't learn how to play basketball by just listening to ESPN. She had to get out there and practice.
Right. Right.
So
absolutely.
And yeah, if you guys have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. Again, it's grouphomeriches.com. You have our contact on there. Kai, awesome job so far. Thank you so much for coming on and giving folks so much value out there. And yeah, keep me posted. Let me know how that licensed property goes. And we'll love to have you on for a part 2 here soon to see how it goes.
Definitely. Thank you. And good luck to everyone.
All right. Thank you so much, Kai. Have a great day.
All right. You too.